Good afternoon. This morning we started the process of cultivating mindfulness, sati, and stability of mind, samadhi, as supports for our clear seeing, our insight or vipassana. And we began working with the breath to strengthen that steadiness and stability and refinement of attention. And in most meditation traditions, the breath is used as a meditation object because bringing our awareness to our physical experience helps us reconnect with the present moment instead of, as is more usual, being lost in stories about the past or fantasies about the future. And the breath is also a relatively simple aspect of experience to pay attention to. So it's a good place to begin training in steadying and refining our mindfulness so that as the sati and the samadhi get stronger, we are able to stay present with more and more aspects of our experience, more complex and more challenging aspects. So the development of mindfulness starts with some fairly simple aspects of experience, and then it progresses until ultimately nothing is excluded from the field of our awareness. And I want to mention that now because sometimes people who heard a lot of beginning mindfulness instructions can develop the misunderstanding that mindfulness is just about being with the breath and the body. And while it's true that we start there and we keep coming back there, the overall trajectory of this practice is to be able to be mindful of every aspect of experience, including our thoughts and emotions. So we'll be working towards that later in the retreat. For now, we're starting at the beginning with the gradual training that's offered in the four establishments of mindfulness. So as I mentioned last night, the Satipatthana Sutta, which is the key discourse for insight practice. And the first establishment is mindfulness of the body. In the general way that I've been offering the instructions so far. So we can think of the body as a kind of an overall frame for our attention that helps us to maintain awareness and to stay connected to our present moment experience, no matter what activity we're engaged in. So I'd like to read you a couple of lines from the instructions, actually from the refrain. This refrain is repeated over and over through the sutta. It says, mindfulness that there is a body is established in one to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and continuous mindfulness. And one abides independent, not clinging to anything in the world. So mindfulness that there is a body is established in one to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and continuous mindfulness. And one abides independent, not clinging to anything in the world. So that phrase, bare knowledge, is sometimes also known as bare awareness or bare attention. And it refers to the non-judgmental aspect of mindfulness. That capacity to just be present without getting caught in our usual habits of reacting to experience. And this attitude of non-reactivity is amplified by the second part of that quote about abiding independent, not clinging to anything in the world. And in fact, we can think of the whole of our insight practice as being about noticing where, when, how we do get caught in clinging or resisting experience, and then how to help that clinging and resisting to release. So clinging and resisting are shorthand for any kind of reactivity to our experience, liking or disliking, wanting or not wanting, any kind of entanglement with it. Including that very common tendency to identify with experience, to take it personally. And I'll be saying more about all of that tonight. For now, just keep in mind that this learning how to not cling, to abide independent, is a key aspect of our progress towards freedom. However, when we sit down to pay attention to the body, what often becomes most obvious is how much we do cling, how much we resist, and how quickly we move into concepts about our experience, assessments and analysis and stories and perceptions and views and opinions and beliefs of all kinds. Sometimes it seems that anything is better than just being present with the simplicity of what's happening in the body. We can also start to notice how much of the time we're living in either the past or the future, regrets and fantasies and worries and daydreams. So again, this is why we train in coming back to the body, because physical sensations are only ever happening now. So this is a powerful training in keeping us back in the present moment. Mindfulness of the body, though, for most of us, is definitely a skill that needs to be practiced. Because in our mainstream society, generally, we're much more encouraged into the intellect than into our bodies. And even the word mindfulness can unconsciously reinforce this more mental relationship to experience. We might even misunderstand it as being thinking about our experience. So for me, it was helpful to hear one of my teachers, Gil Fronsdal, talk about bodyfulness rather than mindfulness. So if you think of it as bodyfulness, does that shift your understanding in any way? So bodyfulness emphasizes the centrality of our physical experience. And coming back to the body helps us to reorient whenever we've got lost in some kind of mental activity or reactivity. So I'd like to share another teaching from Gil Fronsdal now, one that's been very helpful in my own practice. So he has a way of framing experience in terms of the model of a wheel. So this is a diagram. If you imagine a wheel laid out horizontally, just for these purposes, at the hub of that wheel, at the center, we can locate the body and the breath. And then at the outer rim of the wheel, we can locate the mind and mental activity and reactivity, any kind of thoughts and emotions. And with that image, you might get the sense that the further we get from the hub, from the center, the further we get from the body and breathing, the more we tend to experience a sense of spinning out. So when we're on the outer rim of the wheel, there's almost a centrifugal force or energy that pulls us into that kind of looping. So we get pulled off center into all of those mental and emotional dramas that are known as proliferation. But even that very spinning out can be a kind of a wake-up bell or mindfulness bell. We realize, wow, I'm just looping here. Can I come back to the hub of the wheel, to the center, and to the simplicity of just the breath, just the body, just this step? Because for most of us, just like the center of the wheel, the body feels to move more slowly than the speed of the mind. And we can feel more grounded and centered again. So this is one reason why I like to emphasize training in what I call body literacy. Because as I said earlier, most of us are not so familiar with bringing awareness to our physical experience. And so it's a training even to begin to find the language to stay present and connected to that. So we can just practice whenever we remember to notice, even right now, are there sensations of pressure or hardness or lightness or warmth or coolness or heaviness or tingling, vibration, pulsing, throbbing, aching, and so on. There's a whole language that we can develop to help us get more precision with our physical experience. And this is endlessly refinable. So some of you might know, if you practiced in the Mahasi Sayadaw tradition of Vipassana, when meditators meet with their teachers in that tradition for practice discussion, they're expected to take at least 10 minutes just to describe the physical sensations of breathing. For 10 whole minutes, in the most excruciating detail imaginable. Every twitch and tingle and pulse and so on. So in the practice meetings, I only expect you to do that for 5 minutes. Yes, good, you notice I'm joking. I'm not going to invite you to do that in the practice meetings. Just using that as an example, that we can bring more and more refined awareness to our physical experience. And on retreat, that refinement deepens insight. And in daily life, it gives us more information about what's really going on with us. Because I don't think it's just me, but it's possible to misuse the mind to try to convince ourselves of all kinds of things. But for the most part, the body doesn't lie. So we can use the body as a reference point to try to recognize what might be underneath those stories we're trying to convince ourselves are true. And if we listen to our bodies with kindness and compassion, we can often get more clarity about what's happening in our hearts and our minds. So I sometimes share a fairly simple example of this in my own experience. The first time I did a 3-month retreat at the Insight Meditation Society in Barre, Massachusetts. And I was assigned Joseph Goldstein as one of my individual meeting teachers. And I hadn't met him at that point, but I'd listened to a lot of his talks and I'd read his books. And so I was pretty severely intimidated by meeting him in person. And we had practice meetings twice a week, one with him, one with the other teacher. And every time it was with him, I'd be sitting outside the room rehearsing everything I was going to say in excruciating detail. And my hands would be kind of trembling and I'd be judging myself for being so nervous, which of course made the whole thing worse. And then halfway through the retreat, I was sitting there and I realized, oh, I'm calm. Great, I've mastered this. I'm not anxious anymore. Fantastic, I'm doing so well. And then when I went to go into the room, I grabbed the door handle and I couldn't turn it because my hand was sweating so much. So my mind had convinced itself it was calm, but my body was giving me some pretty different information. But it was useful because when I saw what was really going on, I could reorient to a little more self-compassion, and eventually the anxiety did go away more completely and more genuinely. So mindfulness of the body is the crucial foundation that all of our insight practice develops from. And as I said, because of our social and cultural conditioning, most of us don't have a lot of awareness of our embodied experience. So in our next meditation session, we're going to be developing this key skill of mindfulness of the body. And we're going to practice getting clearer about how clinging and release are experienced in terms of our bodies. And for a couple of reasons, we're going to do this as relational practice so that we can use the support of each other to help strengthen the sati and the samadhi. So in English, we have the saying, two heads are better than one. And in relational practice, most people find that having the support of a meditation partner helps them to stay more steady and present and focused. And particularly at this point in the day, it can be really helpful to have somebody to re-energize you when it's warm, or drowsy, or tired. So we're going to be switching gears a little now into our first session of relational practice. We're going to be using the form of insight dialogue to support us. And some of you might not have done this type of meditation in pairs before. So just to be clear, it is a meditation practice. It's not about having an entertaining chat with your partner about whatever. It's also not about disclosing anything personal. So it's not a form of therapy, and it doesn't include any kind of eye gazing or anything weird like that. It's just an opportunity to cultivate mindful speaking, mindful listening, as a support for the deepening of our insight. And of all of it is grounded in kindness, compassion, and self-compassion. So it also gives us a very powerful opportunity to be cultivating these Brahma-viharas, beginning with metta, kindness for ourselves, kindness for each other.